That should be working. We'll see. How close
is that? Pick it up okay? Hey, that's a neat little rig, eh?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Never used one of those before, so it'll work.
Is that yours or is that from the university?
This one's mine.
Oh, good for you. Oh, good. Now tell me about yourself. What courses are you in now?
I'm doing a history honors degree.
Yeah.
At UVic.
What year are you?
Third year right now.
Third year.
But I'm gonna plow through and graduate in the summer.
Good for you. And then what?
And then I'm going to Japan next year.
Are you? On what basis?
On an exchange to learn Japanese at a university.
Isn't that wonderful? Whereabouts, you know, in Japan?
Kobe.
Oh, in Kobe, yeah. Have you ever been to Japan?
I went once for 2 weeks.
Oh, so you know it'll be a cultural experience. And,
yeah.
Oh, good for you. And is that for a year?
For 8 months.
8 months, eh? Oh, good for you. And ultimately, what does this lead to? What will your degree be?
My degree will be history.
Yeah.
History major.
Yeah.
No minor.
Yeah.
Let
me see if somebody gets that. Yeah, somebody's got it.
So I'm pretty sure I don't want to do grad school.
No. But, 21?
21 soon.
I'm close, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you. Where are you from, man?
From Kelowna.
Oh, where are you? Oh, good. And how do you like UVic?
It's a great school.
I was involved there for, my two daughters went there years ago. And then when I came after I retired, I was chancellor for 6 years at the university. And how did you happen to draw my name, or how did this come about?
How it came about was we signed up to do an oral history essay instead of a regular essay
right. For
our History 390, which is War in the Modern World course.
Hmm. War in the Modern World?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's military history, basically.
Military history from 1650 till now. So
boy, that packs a lot in.
Yeah, it's mostly technological advances and
advances
in strategy.
Oh, yeah.
It's written by Dr. Zimmerman. I don't know if you know him.
Well, I know the name. I met a lot of the professors when I was there, but, you know, they're 700 or 800, so I didn't get to know them all well at all. Some better than others. But.
And I'm doing my third year honors thesis on the general in World War II in the Normandy campaign.
Oh, right. Good for you.
So I figured this would be a nice balance.
Yeah. So what you're interested in is primarily the World War II campaign in Normandy. Well,
yeah.
Why I'm asking, Dr. Roy called me. Reg Roy, he was professor of military history. I think he was asked me about see somebody. I said, sure. He said, it can be either the Korean War, the Vietnam War, or the Second World War. I said, well, I'm not very knowledgeable about Vietnam or Korea, but and my Second World War, I was in from 1940 to 1945, late 45. But most of the time, we were sitting in England waiting for something to happen. So my war consisted from D-Day till and 6th of June, 44, to the end of August, 6th of June, 44, to the end of August, 44, when I was shipped back from Normandy to go to Japan. But we never went because the 6th Division, which was being set up then, was stood down before we were ready to go. So I ended up pushing a desk in Ottawa for the last year or so. So my point is, the only expertise, if any, I have, relates from D-Day on to the Normandy campaign. So that's an area of your interest anyway.
Yeah, that's specifically what I'm looking at, actually.
Yeah. Okay, well, you have the questions you asked me, and I'll try and answer them, remembering it 60 years ago. So.
Yeah. I talked with Dr. Roy a bit.
Oh, good. You talked to Dr. Roy.
Yeah.
He's the pro.
Yeah, he's helping run this little show. Do a bunch of other amateurs trying to do some history.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned that you were in the first Hussars.
First Hussars, right, yeah.
Which,
London, Ontario. Tanks.
Okay, and they were from London, Ontario?
That was our home base with London, yeah. And initially, when we went to England in 41, a lot of our boys were from London, Ontario, or Western Ontario. A lot from Northern Ontario, because being in the tanks, we attracted a lot of chaps who had been bulldozer operators or heavy equipment operators. But basically, we were an Ontario regiment. Of course, later on, when the reinforcements came in, we got them from all over. But on D-Day, we were very largely a Western Ontario regiment. I was from Toronto, actually, at the time.
And you arrived in England in 41?
We went over at the end of October 41 as part of the 5th Canadian Armored Division, which was formulated in 41. We had six armored regiments. We were in the 1st Brigade, it was the 1st Hussars, the Fort Garry's, and the Sherbrooke Fusiliers, and we landed in England in, as I say, I think it was early November, and went down to Aldershot where most of the Canadian troops started, and we were there. Well, we were in Aldershot for about a year, and then we were moved all over the south of England. We didn't have any equipment, by the way. We had a few trucks. And a few First World War rifles, some few Bren guns, but we were moved around to make it look like there were a lot of troops in England, because at that time most of the British troops were recovering from Dunkirk or out in the Middle East.
Yeah.
So the Canadians, and then we were moved to Brighton and Hove, which is near Brighton, and then later on over to sort of Salisbury area, and ended up 1944 we were down in a place called Leon Solent, which is right behind the Isle of Wight near Southampton, and so that was our movement in that time.
Okay. And in that time, were you getting training as well?
Well, we didn't, as I say, when we arrived, we had a couple of trucks which were assigned to us. No equipment at all, and then in early 42 we started getting some American General Lee tank for training. We were on the South Downs for training purposes in the south of England, if you're familiar with that area, just south of Aldershot. And then in 42, and then we started getting some Sherman tanks, American Sherman tanks, in 43. And I don't know whether Dr. Roy told you, but our regiment was one of two that were equipped with the DD tank. Are you familiar with the DD tank, the duplex drive?
Yeah, Dr. Roy mentioned
it. Amphibious tank. And General Montgomery came down to visit us. He was then in charge of the British Army in Great Britain, and informed us that we had the honor of being the spearhead of the heart of Berlin, as he called it, and our job were the amphibious tanks, which was a 35-ton Sherman has it been described to you what an amphibious tank is?
If you could just go for it again.
Well, it's a 35-ton Sherman tank. In fact, there's a model of my tank up there, I'll show you. Oh, it's just a toy, but well, maybe you can. Can you reach that? Okay. That's exactly the tank it was, with a 17-pound gun on it. Escape hatch, a driver and a co-driver, machine gun here, the driver here. Inside was the tank commander in here, and the loader operator, and the gunner firing this gun. And we had a founding .5 Browning machine gun coordinated, you know, something there or not. No, it isn't. But there's a machine gun there, and then I had a mountable anti-aircraft Browning attached to the side of the tank. This is a toy, but somebody gave me this. That was the name of my tank, the Holy Roller. But the amphibious tanks, all along the edge here, right around, was a canvas wall about 8 feet high, and when I pulled a lever at the back of the tank here, it was compressed air and tubes, and all of a sudden this thing came up, and you had a Archimedes principle. This weighed 35 tons, so it sank in the water, and the water came up to about here, and then it displaced its own weight in water, if only. And so from the shoreline, all you could see was what looked like a little boat coming in. This is the canvas actually. This is not quite accurate because the gun was inside the canvas. So the Jerry's, all they could see were these looked like little boats coming in. And then when we hit the beach, pull another the same lever down, and that releases the air pressure, and the canvas drops, and you're just a regular fighting tank. And then when later on we ripped all the canvas off it, and we launched two squadrons that were in these A and B squadron, and we launched about 35 tanks, and we were supposed to. There was no communication, but we were supposed to. Launch about anywhere from a mile plus out, but as you're probably aware and you've studied, the weather was very bad, a force 5 or 6 wind, I think I'm correct, and a lot of the tanks that launched further out, the waves came right over the top, and down it went just like a balloon, like a stone, but they were all equipped with Davis escape apparatus, which gave them so many seconds or a minute or whatever it was to get out. And of the 30, now some of them launched further out, some of them went further in, some of them went right in or almost. And of the 35 tanks, DD tanks, we launched, about 21 made it to the beach. So that was, and the casualties weren't as bad as they could have been because a lot of the crew escaped and were picked up. And our job, of course, was to take out the We were supposed to land half an hour before the infantry, but because of the weather and the confusion, which is typical, we actually landed at the same time as the assault infantry, and we were supporting the Regina rifles and the Royal Winnipeg rifles, who were infantry, and were very, very good. But our job was to take out the inflated beach guns and the machine guns that were dug into the Atlantic wall. And some of them, if you've seen pictures, are still there. And we were successful, and met, and great thanks to the infantry, of course, to clean out these guns. And so when the following waves came in, the infantry, the beach was pretty well cleared by about, we landed about 8 o'clock, and by about 12, or thereabouts, we were able to get, there was, of course, a beach wall, but I give credit to the Averys, the Assault Vehicle Royal Engineers. Have you heard of them? They were British engineers, and they enabled us. They were equipped with tanks and bulldozers, and they had a variety. The one was called a flail, and it was a tank with a big thing out the frame out the front with chains, and it went over the beach, and the chains were spinning, and that was detonating the mines on the beach. And then others were what was the other one? One called one had a like a bridge which would project for and help us over get over the beach wall. And others another type where they had the shot. A flamethrower, shoot the flame about 100 feet out into slip trenches and that sort of thing. So, as I say, thank God the infantry really did the work. We helped clear the heavy guns and the machine guns. We lost, some of our tanks were actually hit on the beach. Any of them that got hit were pretty well blown up because the guns on the beach were heavy guns, and our tanks were not, couldn't stand up to them at all. But our casualties weren't as heavy as anticipated, as I said. And we, in the first day, on D-Day, we got to, one of our troop leaders, Bill McCormick, from B Squadron, he got 10 miles inland with his troop, and actually got way ahead of, he was the only one that reached his objective. That was our railway line, 10 miles in, and then he was called back because he was sticking way out in the blue. But at that time, we had broken through, and it was more or less mopping up. Mind you, there were, in all the little towns and villages, there were snipers left behind, and that's why they'd pick off anybody with their head out of the tank was a logical target. So at the end of the day, we had lost about, well, we didn't know how many were killed, of course, because those that were drowned, we didn't know until later on, and they were all taken back to England, of course. But we lost, I think, 6 officers on D-Day and about 50 men, which was heavy enough, but not as bad as it might have been. And we were successful in holding the beachhead, of course, as you know, more so than most other, well, the British were on our left, and they made their objective. And hello. You're speaking. Here we are. That was D-Day. Now, sorry, I'd forgotten that. Did you turn it off? I hope.
Yes.
Oh, good. So, what else? What sort of information would you like now?
The training that you guys went through before.
Well, I must explain, at that time, I was the adjutant of the regiment, and tanks are, I was in headquarters, Holy Roller, all the headquarters tanks had an H, A Squadron had an A on it, B Squadron was had an B. So our training, we trained in England. And in Northern England, let me see, we went up to Northern England in 43, late 43, on the East Coast, and they had that's the first time we saw a DD tank. And our training consisted of driving a tank into just a normal tank, not a DD tank, but driving the tank into a huge swimming pool, if you wish, till it sank. And then we were given so many seconds or whatever the time element was to get our up and escape. Come in.
I don't like to interrupt his interview, but I heard him.
As I say, the first basic training was how you get out of the tank if you drown, because that was a strong probability. And then that was one part of the training. But the other part of the training was working with the infantry, and we worked with the two regiments, the Canadian Scottish and the Winnipeg Rifles, in approach landings. We were in the south of England at this point, and we would go out on the LCTs, the landing craft tank, and would practice landing, and the infantry would come in on their landing craft assault, and we'd practice the landing. All of our, 99% of our training for the last year was based on the landing per se, which was turned out to be part of the problem too, by the way, because everything was concentrated on the successful landing, which made sense. because we did succeed against heavy odds, I guess. During the last months of training, we were down, as they say, on Leon Solon, which is a little village on the right on the coast behind the Isle of Wight. We didn't have any barracks. The men slept down and under the tanks. I went into a pub and slept, and our boys would come into the pub later on. My wife came down. She was overseas in the Red Cross and came down to stay visit with me. And the boys come in, and my wife would say, what do? They went almost drowned. Well, they shouldn't have said that, because this was top secret at the time. The DD tank was a top secret, and there was no information released on it till many years after the war. Whether Jerry had any prior knowledge of it or not, I don't know. They told us he didn't, but we never know that. Of course, the other training and my job as adjutant was communication, which was the key to the other tanks. So I had in my tank, I had a direct communication to the commanding officer, and I also had a direct link to brigade headquarters, so I could pass information or call for backup, and this was later on, of course. When we were in Normandy, then we worked just as a backup. There were no tank battles per se, as you read about them in the desert, tanks against tanks. Anytime we did come up against German tanks, we were totally outgunned, and there was 88mm. Could blow us out of the water or out of the within range. We couldn't even get in range of them to shoot. So most of our work was in supporting of the infantry. There would be a combined infantry tank attack on a hill or a particular position, a village, whatever it might be. The proof of the pudding, you've heard comments and criticism about our equipment. For the purposes of supporting the infantry, it was fine. For the purposes of fighting other tanks, they weren't worth a damn. And on the on the 11th of June, which is about 5 days after D-Day, we encountered our first heavy opposition. We were advised the night before that we would be going in at the first crack of dawn with the Queen's Own Rifles from Toronto to attack a German position. What we didn't know, it was the 12th SS armored position, the Hitlerjugend division. And that was the black day of our regiment, because our information wasn't that good. We were advised that there were some opposition, but not that this armored division was there. Anyway, we went in, and backing up a bit, back to our problems. This was 5 days after D-Day. And before we went in to the attack, we were brought up to strength. New tanks were brought up, and new crews. Well, my job as adjutant was to place these new crews, set them up as a crew with five men, the commander, the gunner, and so on, the wireless operator. But it turned out that when we had about 70 men come up that night, who replaced the casualties we had, and about, I guess, 7 or 8 or 10 officers, I don't remember. And my job was to allocate them. Well, the tragedy was these men were not trained at all. This has all been documented. for instance, one sergeant, I said, Sergeant, whatever his name was, here's your tank and here's your crew. He said, sir, he said, I haven't been in a tank for 3 years. He said, I was the mess sergeant of the reinforcement unit in England for the last 3 years. Sure, I'm a tank man. I came from Canada and I have a badge on my arm, but he said, I don't know one end of a tank from another. The wireless operator, someone said, I haven't operated a wireless set since Camp Borden in 1940. In other words, we had no trained reinforcements at all. And the sad part is we went into battle, that's all we had. So what I would do would mix up some of the experience. I'd mix up these green chaps with experience, mix them all up. But the sad story, and it's all documented in our which you can borrow if you like, our regimental history. Our B squadron was wiped out entirely, and half our A squadron was wiped out, and we lost, as they say, now some of them were taken prisoners, but most of them were killed. In fact, some of them were captured and shot in the back. You probably heard some of those stories. Well, two of our officers we found with a hand sign behind their back and a bullet in the back of their head. So that was the worst day in the history of our regiment. I stayed with the regiment until about the end of August. I got through Caen and into the Felley Gap, you probably read about, in the Felley. And then I was called back. They wanted some Armored Corps officers to go back to Canada to join the 6th Division, as I said, and it was forming up in Vancouver, actually. General Hoffmeister was the commander of the division. And in the meantime, they had us go through the War Staff College in Kingston for 3 months, which delayed us getting out there. So my war ended, as I say, at the end of August. 1944. But when I left the regiment, and this is a sad story, of the 35 officers that had landed on D-Day, there were 6 of us left. We had lost 15 killed and 15 wounded, and we had lost, I forget the numbers of men, it's in the war diary, but probably close to 100 of our men had been killed or captured. So that's the story of my war experience. As such, I ended up, as I said, I was sent to Ottawa on a staff duty job, which was typical of Army. I was in charge of everything I knew nothing whatsoever about. I had all the base hospitals, shoemakers, dental corps, and that sort of thing. It was a staff job, you understand. And I was there from the 1st of January, 45, because we were in Kingston RMC from September till the end of the year, and I was posted to Ottawa, and I was there till on VE Day on May the 8th. I put in for discharge, and I got out in September 45. So that was the end of my history of 5 years, but My battle experience as such consisted of the D-Day landing and June, July, and August. And by that time, I must admit, right now, I'd had all I needed. I'd seen all I wanted to see. And it's interesting to go back and see that you haven't had an opportunity, I guess, to go over to France. Have you? To see the Normandy beaches?
I have actually.
Oh, have you been there? Good. When was that?
2 summers ago.
Oh, then you'd understand. You saw the beach guns and such as they are left, mm-hmm. And did you get down to the American beach where they have the big British display of the whole D-Day? And
no, actually, I didn't.
The British, the American, the two beaches they landed at.
Omaha and
Omaha,
which Sword was the British beach.
Which Utah. Sword was the British one. Omaha and
Utah.
Utah, yeah. Omaha, if you get down to, did you see Omaha Beach?
Yeah.
Well, that's the one with the cliff. You wonder who, on God's name, decided to land the Americans there. Did you see the movie Saving Private Ryan? Well, that's as close. People say, well, you know, what was D-Day really like? Well, I said, if you see Private Ryan, that's as close as I can describe it. It was bloody awful. But our landing was a lot better than the poor Americans, because they didn't have any DD tanks with them. And they landed, the infantry came right in, and they were just sitting ducks. And the portrayal, it might have been exaggerated a little bit, but I don't really think so. I mean, it was just like they were shooting like fish in a barrel. And then the aftermath, or after the Americans got up to the top, and the second half of the film, if you recall, was the defending, when they found Private Ryan, they were defending this little town, and the German tanks came in. Well, that's as close as I could get to describing our Battle of Caen, which went on for, well, we were hung up there for several weeks in through July. But whoever did the staging for that battle of that for that movie, you'd swear you were in Caen because of the devastation and the rubble and all that sort of thing. But, well, I'm glad, because if you've seen it, you can have a better appreciation. And if you saw our beach, we were at Courcelles-sur-Mer, and looking at it today, it's a beautiful sandy beach, and you can still see the sand dunes, some of them, and yet they've left some of the concrete gun emplacements, but it's basically a tourist trap. In fact, I think I got it here. The other day, some friends of mine were over there, and they sent me this postcard of Courcelles-sur-Mer, and where is it now? Well, here's, see the tank there?
Yeah.
Was that there when you were there? Did you remember seeing it?
Yeah.
Well, that's the first Hussar tank. And did you know the story about that?
No.
Well, it's an interesting story, and it in itself tells a lot. That was Bold. His tank's name is Bold. I think it's on there. And that was B Squadron. And that was one of our DD tanks that was sunk way out. We never did know whether it was sunk by enemy action, because they were shooting. Our biggest opposition on landing were mortars coming in, landing, and they'd blow the canvas off, and down they'd go. Or the weather. You never knew which was the worst. Anyway, this tank, Bold, was commanded by a sergeant, a fellow named Leo Garrity, who was a French-Canadian, actually, a fine young man. And his tank was sunk, and he was taken back to England. But very shortly thereafter, he wasn't taken back to England. He landed. He got ashore. He swam ashore, and he landed. And like a lot of, many of them, they were mingled in with the villagers of Courcelles-sur-Mer on the first and second day. Anyway, he's a typical young French-Canadian. He met a young French girl en route and got to know her quite well, obviously. Leo stayed with us and survived. And after he was up, he went through France and Belgium up into Holland. After the war, he came back and he met the young lady and he married her, which is a nice story. And her father owned a pub in Courcelles-sur-Mer. And so Leo ended up working in the pub. And then later on, about in the 50s, I guess, he contacted our regimental headquarters in London, Ontario, recommending it would be a nice thing if they could salvage one of these tanks as a memento of the D-Day landing. So our regiment funded it. Oh, excuse me, I should have... Leo went on and became mayor of Courcelles-sur-Mer. And but through his efforts, our regiment funded salvaging his tank, because he knew approximately where it was. Anyway, I forget what it cost, but we funded it for him. And the tank was salvaged, and of course all stripped down. They took all the canvas, and that's his tank. It's on the town square in Courcelles-sur-Mer. And it was written up in Reader's Digest, had a write-up about it years ago, and I think mentioned in Time magazine too. But very recently, of course, the Canadians and all the veterans participated, financed a $5 million museum to the Canadians at Courcelles-sur-Mer in memory of D-Day. And on the on Bull, the tank, it lists the First Hussars and all the other regiments that landed on that beach, the Fort Garry Horse and the Reginas and the Winnipegs and the others and the British Averys and so on. So it made a nice story to remembrance of those that landed on the beach. So that's the story. Any other areas of interest?
What was it like?
Are you going to have to write something or tell something?
I have to write an essay about this.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But what was it like fighting in the Bocage? Because you read a lot about the...
In the Bocage, you mean the roads and... Just the traveling, the French countryside you're talking about?
Yeah, the Normandy countryside.
Very, very bad. It was very as bad as you probably heard it. In fact, several of our officers, very close friends of mine, of course, were killed because the 12th SS Division, Hitlerjugend it was called, there were kids in there, well, we never ascertained how old, but 13, 14 years of age, and they were very brave or very foolish or both, and they'd be lying down in these ditches, and we'd be going along, and they'd just come up over the top of a hedgerow, because the tank, most of the that countryside, the roads are sunken to a degree, or hedges on the side, so they'd just wait for a tank and like lob a grenade in, and we lost, or shoot, and we lost a lot of, we had a lot of casualties from that. It was very, very tough. So there was really no, which supports what I said earlier, there were no, with exceptions, there were no tank battles per se. The only tank-to-tank battle we ever came was on June the 11th. After that, there would be maybe one troop of our tanks supporting a company of infantry, mostly, you know, small attacks with artillery support. The other thing I should mention, which I had the pleasure and privilege, I had communications from my tank to brigade, as I mentioned, and when we were held up, if we were supporting an infantry attack, and we were held up by a dug-in German 88, which was their practice, or any dug-in German artillery, I could call up through brigade and get air support. And in those days, the Typhoons, they were American Typhoons, would come in and our boys would fire tracer bullets, machine guns, at the target. You're familiar with the tracer bullet?
No.
Well, we had three kinds of ammunition. We had tracer, which would fire bullets, but it was red. It would make a red line at the target. And then we had high explosive shells, which was just what it said, against a wall or a house or something, which would explode on landing. And then the AP armor piercing, which was a special against a tank or something. And anyway, so we'd call up, if we were held up by a dug-in tank or artillery, or field artillery, I could call up brigade and give them a map reference. And within minutes, probably within an hour, I would have Typhoons, Americans, coming right in, would fire at the target, identify where it is, and the Typhoons would come in right on the level, and amazing the accuracy, up she'd go and forward would go. So that was a different type of warfare than shooting against infantry, because you never really saw them. People often say, did you kill anybody, or how many people did you kill? You never know, because all you're doing is firing at a bush or a building or something that you know is occupied. Then, oh, you'd know sometimes if they came out with their hands up, which initially they did, particularly on the beach. Once the infantry were on the beach and we were were shooting into these big guns. The jury came out, a lot of them with their hands up. They were mostly, we were shattered, or surprised, they say, that these were mostly second grade troops, men as old as 50 years of age, if you can imagine. That's old. You know, most of our boys were 18, 19, and 20, and the Germans, of course, they went right down to 12 and 14. But the Germans offending on the beach were basically from occupied countries, conscripted Poles, and a whole variety of people. Of course, we never, the armored people can't take prisoners because we're in the tank. So the infantry, any time would winnow out some prisoners, the infantry would have to take over and look after them. But we did get an opportunity of picking up a lot of souvenirs of because we were generally first on the spot with the infantry right there with us. So that's another aspect. I just wanted to give credit to the both the Americans and Canadian Air Force, who were very good. We had complete air superiority all the time, although the odd German would make a pass occasionally, but mostly for reconnaissance. They didn't do, the German Air Force were totally non-effective as far as we were concerned. And ours, both the Canadians and the RAF and the Americans were very effective. The only problem with the talking about the Air Force, sometimes they were too effective, and you probably have read about the casualties of friendly fire. I know my wife will get that. For instance, the late August when I was sent back to go to Canada, I was called to report to Brigade Headquarters, for which I didn't know what for, but I went. And the Brigade Major said, "Bob, you're heading back to Canada to go to the 6th Division," which is the first I'd heard of it. I was very pleased, needless to say. And I said, "Well, actually, we were going in the next morning for an attack with the infantry." And I said, "Well, I'll go tomorrow." No, he said, "You get the hell out of here right now," which I did. I said, "Yes, sir." Went back to B Echelon, which was some miles back. Spent the night there. And I was given, you're familiar with B Echelon, that's where the support troops were, the food and the ammunition and the water and so on was kept. Anyway, I went back and spent the night there, and I was given, my place of rest was a slit trench, which had been previously prepared, under a truck. They take a slit trench and then they drive a truck over it, and then you put your bedroll in and you go to sleep. Well, during the night, the British came over. They did the night bombing, and somehow they missed their target, and they bombed our B Echelon, and we lost two officers and about four or five men. And I was in a ditch, as I say, a slit trench, but one of the bombs landed nearby and wiped out the truck that I was under with all my equipment, my pistol and my binoculars and such souvenirs that I collected. I had a kit bag with me. And so then, and the next morning, I was very lucky to be alive, of course. But it was a tragedy that here was, you know, all the publicity it got in was it Afghanistan or Iraq, that the three Canadians were killed by Americans this last year.
That was Afghanistan.
Afghanistan. Well, and rightly so, it was a tragedy, but we were, our tragic night was one of, I say many, there were several bad situations where the Americans bombed during the daylight some of our own troops, and the British hit us at night. So that was a part of the warfare that we hadn't counted on, being bombed by our own Air Force. So, what else?
What was your involvement in the taking of Kamp?
Well, We had a very significant role to play. I say we, I'm talking about our whole brigade. My dates have gone. They're all in the war diary. The River Orne came in from the beach and went up right through over towards Caen, and we were on the south of the River Orne. And at some point in time, around the 1st of July or approximately, we were ordered to pull back and went around, and we went down to back towards the beach, and we crossed the River Orne and came up on the other side, which is the Caen side, and the whole brigade was moved around, and of course Caen got a hell of a beating. They shellacked it. In fact, they devastated the Air Force and the artillery, and I presume beach guns too. So our job, when the attack finally came, a large part of our problem was just getting in, because the Jerry was dug in and all the rubble and so on. Most of the villagers had fled, or they weren't the villagers, it was a town. Some of them had fled backwards. Some of them went into the basement cellars and so on. But it was one hell of a fight to winnow out, and the infantry took quite a beating, trying to beat their way through, you know, one street at a time. As I say, it was very much like the battle you saw on the Private Ryan show. That was my last major battle that I was in, I guess. So I can't say what a comparison, but as I read the history, and I have all that is military history, by the way, or 95% of it, if you want something to read. But our boys